When I talked about the Cloud OS in high availability. So today I'm going to talk about the Cloud OS, in specific Windows Azure Pack, how to deploy that across multiple sites or multiple data centers. My name is Thomas Rettinger. I'm a program manager in Windows Server System Center Engineering. I'm part of a team that is working or sits in between the product teams and the customers. During the product development lifecycle, we're making sure that the voice of the customer is influencing the product. So that's pretty much where I'm working on. Yesterday, in the keynote, there was a clear message transported. IT is changing. So we're transforming the business, and Microsoft is driving this vision with the Cloud OS. The idea of the Cloud OS is really what you heard yesterday. It was really a great keynote where we started talking about mobility. People want to work from all over the place, different devices. They want to have a consistent experience across devices, modern apps, big data, and the cloud business itself. So what are we doing from a Microsoft Cloud OS vision to support the end customer? And there's one point I really want to focus on, and that's transforming the data center. This is really going from just doing virtualization, moving up the stack, to really doing Cloud OS. The experience that we bring back into the regular Windows Server System Center products and obviously Windows Azure Pack is really driven by the experience that we have gathered running those services, software at big scale in various of our cloud services like Azure, Bing, Office 365, just to name a couple of them. What we bring to your data center is really multiple technologies. I just want to call out a couple of examples that we bring into the on-premise product. So with Server 2012, we started looking into software-defined storage, scale-out file servers, and software-defined networking, something that we started in 2012 and increased and improved in 2012 or two with the introduction of the multi-tenancy gateways. This is really to set the picture, to set the stage. System Center is our unified management stack for the Cloud OS, where we have self-service, automation, service manager, and obviously the fabric management. Those are the System Center capabilities. I'm not going to talk a lot about that because I'm pretty sure you're all pretty familiar with the System Center components, what they do. And the topic that we're going to focus on today is Windows Azure Pack multi-site deployments. As I said at the kickoff, it doesn't really matter if it is really a site in another geographical location or if it is just a second data center, same town, 10 kilometers away. It's really for each of those scenarios. Just show me your hands. How many of you are using Windows Azure Pack at this point in production? One. How many in test? Okay. And how many of you are actually having really multiple sites in your company? Okay. Way more. Good. The key takeaways that I want you to take away from this session is really understanding what is possible with the technology today to deploy across multiple sites, what are the challenges, listen to the best practices that we have collected working with multiple customers across the globe, and learn from those best practices and really avoid issues that others have already been running into. I'm going to start off with talking about the three scenarios. So we're having today, we're having an understanding of three main scenarios for deploying Windows Azure Pack in a multi-site deployment. The first one actually is what you're going to see here, is really where you have two sites, and you have a full Windows Server System Center stack in each site, and a Windows Azure Pack deployment sitting on top of each of those sites. In order to have a central view for resource consumptions to your tenants or to your business divisions, you can build a custom portal. This is, from my perspective, the most challenging scenario for multiple reasons. It requires a lot of customization. So given that you have to build your own portal, write the automation to call into SMA endpoints or Windows Azure Pack endpoints to talk to the resource provider, like infrastructure as a service, websites, SQL, MySQL databases, all the goodness that comes with Windows Azure Pack. So you have to really code all those calls yourself. You have to build a custom portal. The beauty that you get of that is specifically interesting for service providers because it enables them to plug in other providers, not just Windows Azure Pack. They can bring in Windows Azure, AWS, and other providers, obviously, and can bring them all under one hood, basically, and offer their tenants the ability to select where do I want to deploy in an on-prem, Microsoft Azure, AWS. So you can really manage multiple cloud providers. But as I said before, it's really the most challenging scenario, and it's not a scenario that we're going to focus on today. Another scenario, what we call multiple web instances with a single Windows Server System Center stack. So you really have a single stack of Windows Server and System Center, but you're running multiple Windows Azure Pack instances. So you may ask, why would I do this? And for those of you that have really spent time in Windows Azure Pack may have noticed that the role-based access controls to manage permissions inside Windows Azure Pack gives you a owner of a subscription, and you can add a co-administrator, but he has full access to the subscription. So he can consume all the services, he can delete all the services, so there is no RBAC model in Windows Azure Pack. And there are scenarios, and just call out an example here, is where you want to have, you're a hoster, and you have an enterprise as customer, and you have to manage multiple divisions. And you don't want to make them all co-administrators to have the same permissions for the subscription. So the only way to really abstract those permissions would be really bringing up multiple Windows Azure Pack instances so that you can give each division its own subscription. This is really the scenario that is covered here. Is it a real multi-site scenario? Probably not, but it's really a scenario that we have seen customers doing. This is the scenario where we're going to focus on today. It's really deploying a single Windows Azure Pack instances and multiple instances of Windows Server System Center stack. It allows you to really model what we do in Microsoft Azure, where a user can really decide where do I want to deploy a specific VM or a specific service in Azure. So it really gives you the ability to select, I want to deploy a VM to North America. I want to deploy a VM to Europe, as you see in that example. And this is really the scenario that we're going to look into. As you're going to see, our enemy in this scenario is obviously latency. Latency is the issue that we have to deal with. It's a aspect that you have to deal every time when you're doing any kind of multi-site deployments. Let's focus a little bit on why latency, how this works, right? For those of you that have not spent too much time on Windows Azure Pack, and this is really an example for infrastructure as a service. So in order for Windows Azure Pack to talk down to the Fabric controller, what is Virtual Machine Manager, we have Service Provider Foundation in the middle, what offers a OData REST API to do the calls into the Fabric controller. And we have, in this deployment, we have a single instance of Service Provider Foundation that has to communicate to multiple Virtual Machine Manager instances. So this is really where the latency link comes into play. I hope you can read this in the back. This is really an example deployment that we have done where the first thing is what we're going to ping is from our SPF server to the Virtual Machine Manager server. Obviously, the site, if we just go back here once, as you can see, this becomes what we call the primary site because the Windows Azure Pack instance has to live on a single, has to live on a specific site. So this becomes what we call the primary site. And what I do here is really running a ping from SPF on the primary side to the VMM server on the primary side. As expected, we have low latency. The second example here is really where we ping across the Atlantic from the SPF on the primary side to the Virtual Machine Manager instance in the secondary side in Europe. This goes cross-Atlantic through a VPN tunnel, and you see we are having response times of 200 milliseconds, and it's still stable in that range. So this is really a range that we can work with. We're not losing any communication, so if we're doing at calls from SPF into Virtual Machine Manager, this is still a latency range where we're not gonna lose any calls. Windows Azure Pack has multiple providers, right? I mentioned this is for infrastructure as a service. All the resource providers in Windows Azure Pack work in the same way. So the only difference is that you directly go from Windows Azure Pack to a specific resource provider. So there's no man in the middle like SPF. So if you take this to a SQL Server example, web directly goes from the SQL resource provider to SQL Server. But you still have the latency between the resource provider and SQL Server. Windows Azure Pack plan management in a multi-site deployment. This is really how this is gonna play out, and let me walk you through this. So we have a user, or let's start by the plan. So as a administrator, you configure the plans for each web, for each site. So you bring up a plan for North America and you bring up a plan for Europe. A user has the ability to subscribe to those plans. And each plan has specific resources assigned. In an ideal world, they would be the same from a hoster perspective. In an enterprise environment, that can be completely different, where you say, well, I only want for Europe to be able that my tenant can deploy a specific application. So you can really target specific applications. Really depends on what you allow in the plan that users can subscribe to. And we're gonna look later in the demo, how does the user experience really look like? How does it look if I'm a tenant logging onto the tenant website and I wanna deploy a SQL database or a virtual machine, and how does it look how does the selection look like where to deploy to? This is, again, how this looks in a real-world scenario where we have two Virtual Machine Managers servers registered in Windows Azure Pack through a single SPF instance. What you see here is basically, again, the primary server in North America and a secondary site in Europe. And what's going to happen is, obviously, as it happens in a single site deployment, as soon as you have hooked up Virtual Machine Manager into Windows Azure Pack, it will bring up all the clouds that are created in Virtual Machine Manager. So for infrastructure as a service, it's a little bit specific because you have SPF, and SPF allows you to manage up to 5 different Virtual Machine Manager services. In the SPF world, we're talking about stamps. So a stamp is equal to a VMM instance. And by simply going into SPF, you can query the SPF servers. For those of you that had an early look into the first version of Windows Azure Pack, you had to create all those stamps manually. Today, this is all automatically created through the portal. As soon as you register a cloud service, he will go and create that stamp automatically for you. So the limitation is really up to 5 sites in this deployment. Challenges. So obviously one is the I'm not sure if it's fair to call it a limitation, but we support up to 5 VMM servers. Haven't heard anything negative about it so far. And the second thing that in a multi-site deployment, what you have seen is that each side requires its own virtual machine manager, and a virtual machine manager has a concept of a library, and that library content is not synchronized across sites. So there is no inbuilt functionality in VMM that allows you to replicate content from one site to another. So why is that important? Because as I said earlier when we talked about plans, you want to make sure that whenever a user is going to spin up a VM, you want him to be able to have the same options, in an ideal case, for all the sites. So to be frank, it is the manual operation of the administrator to make sure that the libraries are in sync. In the past, I mean, VMM is not a new product, so it's been around for a long time, and there are different technologies like DFS, DFSR, around for doing replications. So those technologies are not supported for syncing libraries. And this is simply because each library has also SQL data attached in the SQL databases. So that's the real challenge here. A lot of customers have solved this by simply doing robocopy jobs, copying the content, but you still have to go back into the library and assign specific attributes to the objects in the library. And if you think about a virtual hard disk, it's like a family name, it's a release version, it's the operating system, it's the hypervisor platform. So it's a couple of attributes that still need to be assigned manually. The beauty of Windows Azure Pack is because it brings automation. So you can go and write a runbook that simply does the work for you to keep the libraries in sync, right? I mean, you can copy the content and then just simply run the runbook to set those attributes via PowerShell. This is for what we call in Windows Azure Pack, for those of you that work with Azure Pack, is really you have the ability to provision standalone VMs and VM roles. It gets worse, so this is a great scenario for standard VMs, standalone VMs, because they're based on VM templates. For VM roles, it's getting a little bit worse, because for VM roles, they're imported globally on the Azure Pack layer. So when you import what is called the resource definition, it gets imported into Azure Pack. And it's looking for the VHDs to deploy those VMs automatically in the library. So if you're not synchronizing the library content, and somebody says, hey, let's deploy a VM role, take an example, IIS. No matter what site he selects to deploy, he will always see that item. And if the library content isn't there for, let's say, Europe, the deployment will logically fail. So this is something that you have to keep in mind. So there are a lot of specifics that you need to think about. VM console access. And this now goes into more components, right? Deploying Windows Azure Pack is not just simply bringing out Windows Server System Center or a bunch of Hyper-V clusters, managing them by Virtual Machine Manager. So in Windows Azure Pack, we have the ability to do remote console access. And that requires a remote desktop gateway. Those gateways have to be deployed per site. So each site requires you to deploy a remote desktop gateway. And if you look at the traffic flow, given that we have a single instance of Windows Azure Pack, so the user is logged on an Azure Pack on the tenant site, selects the VM, presses, hey, I want to have console access. We're going to create the RDP file and present the RDP file back to the user. And in the RDP file contains the IP address of the gateway. So the user itself will always get the direct connection to the right site. It's just the creation of the RDP file will go through SPF, because SPF will query the VM on which hypervisor host the VM is running right now in order to present the right information in the RDP file. So this is really important to keep in mind. So you need to require to deploy multiple remote desktop gateways. Sorry for that. When do I configure this RD gateway? So every time you register a VMM server in Windows Azure Pack, you also have the option to specify the RD gateway that should be used for that specific instance. So this is linked together. We talked a little bit about SPF stems. So in Windows Azure Pack, every time you register specific resource providers like the RD gateway, VMM, Operations Manager, they become an SPF server. So this is an easy way for troubleshooting, for example, if you're having issues, looking, did the registration work? You go to SPF and simply query, has the entry be created? And in this example, you see I only registered one gateway, but two VMM servers, an Operations Manager data, and SMA. And the same concept applies to the NVGRE gateways. So Windows Azure Pack gives you the ability for a tenant to create his own network. How does this look in VMM? You heard, I think there was a session yesterday about software-defined networking. So a VM network with Windows Network Virtualization gets created under the hood. And in order for the tenant to leave the isolated network to talk to the outside world, either through a site-to-site VPN tunnel or to the internet and doing regular NAT, you require an NVGRE gateway. And those NVGRE gateways also need to be deployed per site, because the gateways are registered to a specific VMM server. Might be a different deployment site for an enterprise if you don't use SDN, if you're using traditional VLANs, so you don't need the gateway. So it might be a little bit simplified in that scenario for an enterprise. Usage data. So Windows Azure Pack provides you usage information for all resource providers, and the usage data is implemented per resource provider. So in the case of VMM, of Infrastructure as a Service, we require Operations Manager to collect the usage data. And I think there is or was already a session today about usage in Windows Azure Pack. So everything that you already know about usage, and I just put in some links here that you can reuse later, that all go to the Building Clouds blog that we own, how to configure usage. Everything that you already know about usage applies. So there's no specific things about multi-site deployments, with the exception that you need a SCUM server per site. Where does this come from? So if you look on VMM, VMM needs to have a one-to-one connection between VMM and Operations Manager. So there is no one-to-many connection here. And this is exactly how this looks, right? So you marry the Operations Manager and VMM in the secondary side, and that data goes back into SPF. From SPF, at some point, it will go back into the usage database. And you do this per site. And for those of you that have already been running through that configuration, what we call service reporting, so in SP1, in 2012 SP1, usage information was stored in Service Manager. This was taken out in this release and was moved into a new product called Service Reporting. And when you configure Service Reporting, there is a script that you have to run that is called Maintenance Config. What it basically does, it registers the Operations Manager. And even in the sample file, it already tells you SCUM 1, SCUM 2, right? And probably people of you have been wondering, why does it already call out multiple SCUM servers? The reason is simply for multi-site deployment, to show in the example file that we support collecting data from multiple Operations Manager instances. this is where it gets interesting, right? If you think about the first scenario, or the scenario that I showed you that we covered here, is that one site became the primary site. It runs the Windows Azure Pack instance. Obviously, if that site goes down, my Windows Azure Pack is down. So I need to come up with a way to fail over Windows Azure Pack itself. And this is where, or this is one reason where replication comes into play. This can be either, in that case, it can be native Hyper-V replication. But you also want to look at offering replication as a service to your customers. And this is where Azure Site Recovery comes into play. And let me talk a little bit about that. And that's simply because the way Azure Site Recovery integrates into the stack is by installing a provider into Virtual Machine Manager. And that provider will capture what are the clouds that I have created in VMM. So after I have selected the cloud that I want to replicate, I can fine grain select VMs that I want to have replicated. Is this a self-service today? No, it's not. So a tenant itself cannot select, I want to replicate a VM. That's not possible. So you either select it on the admin side to enable replication for the specific tenant VMs, or you do it for all VMs in a specific cloud. That you say, hey, I have customer XYZ, and I create a dedicated cloud for that customer, and I enable full replication for the entire cloud. So every VM that gets created in that cloud gets automatically replicated. And replication, this is all great, but the way this is envisioned is either through a second Windows Azure Pack portal. What is the preferred way? That you have a second portal, a backup portal, or you really go, because you have two scenarios. Scenario one is where the entire site goes down, where Windows Azure Pack itself needs to fail over, and the replicated VMs will automatically be registered. But the problem is, and this is what we call tenant stamping. I wrote this down here on the deck. What we mean by tenant stamping is replicating a VM will not replicate the specific VMM attributes that are required for Windows Azure Pack to show up a VM in the portal. So those attributes are not replicated. So one of the MVPs wrote a great script, basically, that does exactly the tenant stamping. And tenant stamping means really, in VMM, there are two attributes, and that's basically who's the owner of the VM, and that needs to match the tenant ID, and that's what we call tenant stamping. And that needs to be orchestrated as of today. Right, and that brings me to a demo to show you how this really looks in action. So this is Windows Azure Pack, and this is a deployment where I have registered two VMM servers, one North America, the other one is running in Europe. As I said before, while registering those servers, they will automatically pull up all the clouds. If we go to the edit field here, you can see this is how I registered it, and this is where I put in the dedicated remote desktop gateway while I registered a server. And this is pretty straightforward, actually. Where it gets interesting in is when setting up plans. So let's create a new plan here and call this SCU Demo North America. This should be a plan that offers infrastructure as a service. So I'm selecting virtual machine clouds, go next, and this is done. So he's creating the plan. The next step is basically go into the plan. That's what we do now, is going into the plan and selecting the specific VMM server. So in the drop-down list, he obviously presents me all the VMM servers that I have registered through SPF. So I'm selecting my North America server. And then he's bringing up my clouds. This is SCU North America. And then I can just proceed as I would configure a regular plan in a single-site installation, configure my usage limits for customers, assign specific networks. If I'm not assigning any networks, we're pretending tenants will create their own networks that use Windows Network Virtualization, SDN. I can assign specific hardware profiles, templates, and gallery items. In this example, I'm going to assign a template. So what he's going to do, he's basically reaching out to my VMM server in North America and shows me all the templates that I have available in the gallery, in the library. So I'm selecting my SCU template. Just hit OK. I can configure specific additional settings. In that case, I'm just allowing him to connect to the console of that virtual machine. And we successfully created that plan. Then we're going to go and create an additional plan for the Europe side. Do an SCU demo Europe. It's going to be, again, it's a plan for infrastructure as a service. Go into the plan. It's the same story again. We select the VMM server. In this case, this is SCU2 for Europe. And we have the cloud called SCU Europe. Again, we can configure the usage limitations for this plan. And I'm going to assign a template again. And in this case, I created a template called SCU Template Europe. And this is where I said, if you want to make sure that you get a consistent experience for your tenant or division, you need to manually make sure that you create those templates on each site to make sure it's a consistent experience. Because otherwise, you wouldn't have the selection. You would have a different selection. All right, let's save this plan and look how this looks under the hood in VMM. So in VMM, we have the cloud. This is the cloud that I got, that I created. And wait a second. In the library, this is where I created my VM templates. And this is the template that I have created. And those templates are coming up, basically. What's important to know, again, there is a difference in standalone VMs and in VM roles. Templates have hard-coded assignment to the virtual hard disk. And if we look at the cloud object that I created, for this scenario, for standalone VMs, there is no need to create or to assign a library to a cloud because the VHD is hard-coded in the library in the template. For VM roles, it's not going to be the case, and I'm going to talk about VM roles later in the afternoon, where a VM role just goes and queries what are the disks in the library, and if I'm not assigning a library to a cloud, and if somebody tries to deploy that VM role and he tries to select the virtual hard disk, there's not going to show anything. So think about that when configuring the clouds for those deployments. And the same thing is done on the second side. The same configuration here on the second side. So again, we have the cloud that was showing up in Windows Azure Pack that I called SCU Europe. And we have a template that I created. And you all have seen the template because I assigned it to the plan. So this is what happens under the hood here. Okay, let me just go back here. So we now have two plans. What I'm going to do is I'm quickly bringing up a user to show you how does the user experience look like. So I'm just going to create a new user. And this is where I can select to which plan I want to subscribe. Either, I mean, since I'm creating the user now from an admin side, I have to assign it to at least one plan, so one subscription gets created. The regular way this works is that you go to the tenant portal and the tenant signs up for the portal. As you all have seen it, probably going yourself through Microsoft Azure. And when after you have signed up, it will present you plans that you can subscribe to. So I'm going to assign this user now for the North America plan. And while he's creating the user and the subscription for the North America plan, we can go into VMM for North America. And what we're going to see is basically that the user object gets created automatically in VMM. So let's go back here and go into that user. Go into subscriptions and add a subscription. And in this case, I also want him to be able to deploy to Europe. So I'm selecting or subscribe him to the Europe plan. So hit OK here. And we go back into the VMM server for Europe. We'll get the same settings, see, check if the user gets created. And we see the subscription also got created in the Europe plan. So now at this point, I can really log on as a tenant. And let me do this right now. I apologize for the certificate errors, but since this is a demo installation, this should be fine. So we log on with the user that we just created. And just by the way, if you're wondering, so I'm VPN'd in into our Microsoft CorpNet. And the primary site is in Redmond, so it goes across Atlantic right now to the primary Windows Azure PAC server in Redmond. All right, so we're logged on right now. And the first thing I want to really show is that if you're subscribed to multiple plans, you get a new button here that says subscriptions. And I can filter subscriptions. So I can make sure that I can say, well, I have so many sites, or I'm subscribed to so many plans, I want to just really limit the few right now to see all my service in North America or see all my services deployed in Europe. But since I'm at the beginning, haven't deployed anything, I just leave the scope to all my subscriptions. And when we log into Create Virtual Machines, selecting a standalone VM because we have only assigned a VM template, go to Templates. We're going to see the SCU template. And the subscription here is for North America. When we go to disk, it's a bit different, where we see the subscription, the disks that he's querying. Remember, I have assigned a library to my VMM server, to my cloud. So he's really doing a query here and shows me all the disks. So if I'm deciding to create a VM from scratch without the template, I can even go and select the specific VHD, and he's showing me for which subscription this happens. The only thing that made me a little bit thinking about is we should have seen the SCU template for Europe that for some reason didn't pop up here. Maybe we have more luck with SQL Server. Let's look into SQL Server. So this is pretty much from a VM deployment, as you have seen. You get the templates. The template will tell you what subscription it belongs to. And whatever subscription you select, the VM will get deployed in that site. Let's switch back here to my presentation. So for next to infrastructure as a service, Windows Azure PEG also gives you the ability for websites. So websites are an entire deployment with multiple servers, and after it follows the same principles. So you bring up the Windows websites for Windows Azure PEG deployment, and you can register multiple website servers in Windows Azure PEG, and it follows the same principles. You register the server. This is exactly what I have done. You see there's already one registered, and we're going to go and register a second server here for Europe, and it follows the same principles during plan creation. You have seen when I was creating the plan, I selected infrastructure as a service, and I configured virtual machine clouds. So during that plan creation, you can also select this plan should contain the ability for tenants to provision websites. So it follows the same principles. So for the North America plan, you select websites and point it to the website server that is located in North America. Then you go to the Europe plan and add the website server for Europe. And then it follows the same principles. SQL Server. SQL Server follows, again, it's the same principle for all resource providers. I said that in the beginning. The only specific thing to SQL Server is that you have to create groups first. So you're not simply just registering the server in a standalone deployment. So in a multi-site deployment, you first have to create groups. So you create a group per site and then register the server. And again, I have a quick demo on this. You may have already noticed in the first demo when you looked on my Azure PEG deployment that you have seen that I have a single SQL server registered at this point. And this is a North America SQL server. And hopefully it's going to work. We're going to add a second SQL server that we first registered in Windows Azure PEG that sits in Europe. So the connection was good, so we're using SQL authentication for registration, and let's see, it's looking good. So we're now in the same stage as we have been before with virtual machines. We have two servers, one per site registered, and this can be a standalone server, but this can also be a SQL guest cluster, or a SQL cluster. This can be SQL with always on. Everything is expected here. And you can have multiple groups here, basically, where you can have a North America group for standalone SQL servers. You can have a group for North America clustered SQL servers, whatever you envision to provide to your tenant. So let's do the same thing, right? Go into plans, select our North America plan, add a service to the plan. We go SQL Server. Do the same for the Europe plan. Go back on the tenant side. Do a quick refresh here so that he can just update his subscriptions. That's fine because I did it from the admin side. So you only need to make them public if you want to have a user to sign up to a plan. Then you may need to make them public. So in my case, it's just really simply by that I use the admin side to bring the user to the subscription. Let me quickly see why. Did I use the wrong? Well, it seems to be the demo god isn't with me today on this part. Okay. I apologize for that demo. So what you should have seen basically is that when we go and deploy a SQL server and go and deploy a database, that we should have seen a selection to which subscription I want to deploy a specific database. And the same goes for MySQL servers. Same principles as for SQL Server. Create a group per site, add the specific MySQL server to the group, assign it to the plans, and users will be able to consume SQL Server databases and select a site where to provision. And this is exactly how the example looks, and in case the demo breaks, as it did, I've put in this slide here. This is really where you're going to see how the dialog looks like. So I give it a name for the database, and this is where my subscription dialog pops up, and I can go and select to which subscription I want to deploy that database, and the database or the subscription really maps to a site. That's a thing that you need to make transparent by giving a strong name that identifies the site, basically. Service bus, same goes in service bus. You register multiple service bus instances, one per site or multiple per site, assign it to plans, and the consumption looks in the same way. You go to the tenant portal, create a new message queue, and select a subscription where you want to deploy that message queue to. We got time left since the demo did break, so I can open it up for Q&A. So if you have questions on the multi-site deployment, any questions on the multi-site deployment? So we're having roughly 10 minutes left, so if you have questions, feel free to raise them. Anything that come into your mind thinking about multi-site deployments, challenges that you have, that you think about? Please. So the question is, can I have multiple sites? Because the example I did was for North America and Europe, right? So only virtual machine managers, so for infrastructure and as a service, I have the limitation of 5 servers because I can only register 5 servers. So that means I have the limitation of 5 sites, 5 regions. For SQL, MySQL, service bus, I don't have the limitation of 5 sides, so they're coming without limitations. So you can have more than 5 sides. It's a great question. So the question is, if I'm having users in multiple sites and all of those sites have geo-specific limitations based on latency, what's the available internet connection, how to do the decision where to place my primary Windows Azure Pack instance? It's a great question. As I already touched a little bit on, it's really think about which of the countries gives you the best internet connectivity. That's the question, because the way you expose this can be either you expose the tenant site directly through your DMZ to the internet, or you just keep it really completely internal and you have a VPN available and let your user VPN in order to consume the service. It's really about the architecture that you decide to go for how to publish this, right? So there are two ways, right? Either you publish it directly to the internet or you let them only consume it through secure VPN technology. Correct, and that basically, again, fails into the same bucket where you say, let them VPN in or direct consumption. Based on experience, I would say, as an enterprise, you probably trend more to keep it internal instead of publishing. This is the experience that we see right now working with enterprise customers. They're not envisioning exposing the tenant site directly to the internet. They really use their existing technologies for VPN, let the users VPN in, and just open up the tenant portal internal. That's really what we see for traditional enterprises at this point. It's a different world in the hoster and service provider world, right? So they have customers also that want to directly consume it through the internet. Again, there's multiple things, right, for scenarios that we have seen in the hybrid cloud. So App Controller is the only available product today for real hybrid cloud consumption from Microsoft. And you can use App Controller to register your Windows Azure subscription, but you can also go and register your Windows Azure Pack subscription. So you can get your on-premise and Windows Azure subscription in one tool to manage VMs, for example. That's the only tool that is right now available for managing real hybrid clouds. But it brings up its own portal. Any other questions on the topic? So the question is, can the user creation be automated through an SMA runbook? So the users, it might just have looked like I created them manually in each site. What I have done is basically the users got created automatically. All I have done is I have subscribed to a plan, and the user gets automatically created, so you don't need a runbook for that. This is really handled automatically. As soon as the user signs up for your web service, right? He goes to the Windows Azure Pack portal, says, hey, I want to sign up, swipe the credit card, and I say, which plans you want to assign to? And you go like North America, Europe, and the users get automatically created in the background. Of course, you can fully automate through PowerShell the creation of the Azure subscription and the plan assignment. So in an enterprise scenario where you have existing Active Directory user, you bring them to Windows Azure Pack through ADFS, and you want to pre-create and or pre-assign those users to your plan, so you can fully automate that through PowerShell. And obviously, yes, you can then put in a runbook. Well, if there are no other questions, I ask you to provide feedback for the conference. Thanks to the sponsors, and thanks for attending the session. Hopefully it helps. Thank you.